Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is one of our favorite people, New York State Assemblyman Jim Todisco, a Republican who represents New York's 112th Assembly District, who really has been the guy who comes up with more good ideas, which are then stolen by the Democrats, than anybody I know. Jim Todisco, thanks so much for being with us.
Plagiarism. I call that plagiarism. Let me ask you something.
Please.
Before we start this.
Okay, please.
Did you ever see that movie, Benjamin Button, with Brad Pitt?
Yes.
Do you have a special diet or anything?
Yes.
Because every time I see you, you're getting younger and I'm getting older. There's something wrong here.
A great,
you look great,
a
my
great
friend.
Republican assemblyman that I knew, you, once said every time they start to say to you, you're looking good, it means you're looking bad.
You're looking a little bit older, but I mean it this time. Maybe it's the hat you got on there. I should have worn my hat.
It could be. Well, we have plenty of hats around here, Jim Todisco, and you will have one when you walk out of here.
Oh, thank you. Is it below $12? I don't think I can take anything.
Yeah,
you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we might even throw in an Allen bobblehead for you.
Oh, my gosh. That would be right in my living room. My wife would adore that, really.
Jim, how's the governor doing?
Well, we saw the poll today, and he's not doing well. See, the problem with the governor, and I said this the other day, he's very bright, he's very intelligent, but he thinks the three branches of government, you know, the judiciary, the legislative, sure, and the executive, are me, myself, and I, okay? You cannot interact with the legislature the way he's interacted. A classic example is what he's done with this so-called agreement with Majority Leader Flanagan in the Senate about this database with the SAFE Act, a portion of it. That's a law that we put in place legislatively. Two branches of government voted for it. He signed it. You're not going to change. Well, he really didn't change it to begin with. That was a boondoggle. Either some of the senators didn't read the memo or the bill, or they distorted what the bill was going to do. But you can't unilaterally, through one leader of a part of the Senate and the Assembly, which are the two branches, change a piece of legislation, even though he did it with a message of necessity in the middle of the night, which he does on things that he doesn't want full exposure on. That's going to be taken to court anyway, probably, if it really changed something. Somebody, the Attorney General, might even have to take that to court.
Jim Todisco, I have always felt, and I've written for years and years and years and said so, that this governor wants a Republican state Senate. Wants it. When he campaigned for office the first time, he said, you know, if you elect me, I'll make sure there's an outside group doing the apportionment, and we won't have any more of this self-serving stuff where people are allowed to draw their own districts to the majority parties. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you and I are in agreement because you're in the minority.
Oh, yes,
in the Assembly. But he comes in and he doesn't do that, and he does everything in his power to get those guys elected. And I think this memo with Flanagan in the gun thing, I want to go back a little bit. Cuomo passes, as you indicated, in the middle of the night, something called the SAFE Act,
yeah,
something I applauded him for. And the SAFE Act, you know, was right after Sandy Hook, and a terrible tragedy. And, you know, I wrote a good column about him and said, that's good. Now, the Republicans in the Senate are taking it in the neck, whose arms got twisted to vote for it. So this deal with Flanagan, in which he says, we're going to take some of the more onerous parts of this bill away, this is another example, I think, of trying to keep the Republicans in the state Senate.
Well, first of all, you're right. He's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You can't be all things to all people. And he's going to decide what he's going to be. Is he going to be a liberal progressive, or is he going to be a moderate or a conservative? And you're dealing with the devil you dance with, okay? And that, with him, it seems to depend on the day. And the SAFE Act, when we did that in the middle of the night with a message of necessity. Now, regardless of how you feel about the SAFE Act, I think it changed the Second Amendment to Amendment 1.5 in New York State. But it came out in the middle of the night. We didn't have a chance to read it, much like the Big Ugly did this year. Did you see that Big Ugly, Bill, that sure. came out at the end of the year?
The Big Ugly is, for those who are not regular watchers of the legislature, is the end of the session when everybody makes the trades and everybody makes
right.
agreements.
And they do the thing that most people say they hate. Why did you vote for this? Oh, because all this good stuff was in it. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. They clump things together. But all six or seven of these things they knew in January had to be done. The rent control for New York City, the tax abatement, $1.3 billion.
What is a tax abatement?
These are checks which are going to be given to individual homeowners, $1.3 billion. And it's above and beyond the cap. We're still going to have that cap. We're still going to have the senior cap. But then there's $1.3 billion. Which, if your municipality stays below the cap, you'll get that extra rebate. Then we did the charter schools. All that was known in January. They waited for 6 months, got at the end of 6 months, then in 7 and 8 days, completed all 4 or 5 or 6 of these important things. But then when they got to the end of that extra session, which cost tens of thousands of dollars in reimbursements to legislators who had to come in for an extra week, they said, now we need another message of necessity to get this bill done.
Okay, stop right there. Message of necessity, for the few who don't remember what it is, allows the governor to say, under extraordinary circumstances, for example, a tidal wave might be coming towards New York or something like that, that yeah. we have to pass this.
Not extraordinary, emergency situation.
Yeah, you don't have to have it on your desk for 3 days.
Right. Our founding fathers were smart. They weren't smart enough to know that we could move into the digital age. And as Cuomo said, sometimes a good politician will blow his own horn or there's never any music. And of course, I helped get Proposition 2 passed, as you know.
You did indeed. I think you were the first one to start talking about
it. And I'm proud to say we got the laptops on everybody's desk. Win, win, win. We're more efficient. We're saving $13 million a year. And we're not putting ink-filled tons of reams of paper in landfill. So we got that done.
So what about all those old guys who are up in those rooms that smell of paper? Are they all gone now?
They're the guys who are going to maintain all these laptop systems. They're going to keep them in order.
Those old guys are going to do that?
Sure they are.
Yeah,
we'll keep them going. But here's the point I'm trying to make. A message of necessity is an emergency. It's either a terrorist attack, a storm is coming, sure. a financial. We've passed bills after bills through this governor and others, Republicans and Democrats. I won't vote for any more messages of necessity. In fact, I have the bill called the New York State Government Transparency Act, which says unless it's a real emergency, you can't bring it out. And it's got to be a 2/3 vote. And we shouldn't work between the hours of 12 midnight to 8 a.m. at night unless it truly is an emergency.
Why do they keep you there from 12 to early in the morning to make you like sheep and go, bah?
So the media wouldn't be there, so the public wouldn't have access to see what was taking place, and so they can do the things like a SAFE Act, and here's the point I was trying to make. When we did that in the middle of the night and guys were sleeping across chairs and desks and said, I want to get home, I don't want to debate it, about a month later, we found out that the policemen were actually illegal with the guns they were carrying because they had too many bullets in their guns. And there were so many other reforms we had to make. We had to come back and make a whole bunch of amendments to the SAFE Act to begin with. So that's what happens when you have a rush to judgment on some of these things. And what they did again with this bill, this Big Ugly, another rush to judgment. And it was kind of like the boy who killed his parents, then went before the courts and said, give me leniency. Give me mercy. I'm an orphan child.
This is okay? what we call the classic definition of chutzpah.
Chutzpah, yeah. You guys are going to cost us more money by not doing a message of emergency. These clowns got us to that point for 6 months. Didn't do the 7 or 8 things which are most important. Rent control, tax rebates, charter schools, do some common core, that 421 cut. And then they used an extra week, got them done and ready to go. All we needed was 3 days. If you do that, you'd be responsible for costing taxpayers money. You know what begs the question? What have you been doing for 6 months? So, you know, I put forth a piece of legislation and I got several sponsors on that to shorten the session to 3 months, April 1st. You know why? Because we should be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. The budget's due on April 1st. You mean we can't do anything but the budget for 3 months, April 1st? But here's the kicker. If they prove that in 1 week they could do the 7 or 8 most important things we knew in January, they can do them in a week. So we'll get to April 1st. We'll get the budget done. We've been good at that. And then they'll probably say, well, we need an extra week. We'll take that extra week. We'll get those seven or eight things done. And we won't spend 3 months bringing rank and file members with per diems across the state of New York. And believe me, they don't need any more per diems, as you can see. They're getting in trouble with these per diems.
Let's talk about ethics for a while. Preet Bharara, of course, set everybody on their toes. He's brought charges against Shelley Silver and the Republican Dean Skelos.
Yes.
And there are rumors around, whatever they mean, about the executive branch, and who knows. But has that brought a sense of fear to the legislature?
I don't know if it's fear. You shouldn't be feared if you haven't done any of those things wrong. Okay, I mean, these are huge, unbelievable, if they're all come to fruition and true. Unfortunately, I just saw today that the same time the ex-speaker, Sheldon Silver, goes to court to start his case, his son-in-law, his daughter's husband, will be sentenced to a minimum, I think, of 5 years in prison and have to pay back $5.9 million. That doesn't bode well for the family, of course, but I don't think many of us have fear. I think there are fear from some individuals who have done some of these things individually over the years, but hopefully it will stop. They won't be doing them. And if they do, he'll continue to do the job he's doing.
Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney.
Yeah. Look, there's a whole bunch of things we have to do. You talked about ethics, and again, that's one of the things, even when an extra week we didn't get done. We didn't get that pension reform that, let's face it, if you don't live up to your oath of office and you're selling your office to individuals for your own financial gain, you're really not representing your constituents. Should you really get your pension? You have to go to jail for 5 or 10 years, then you come out and for 15, 20, 25 years, you're on the taxpayer's dole for your pension. You didn't live up to your oath of office. That never got passed in both houses.
I'm shocked. I'm just shocked there's gambling going
on. Yes, shocked. Casablanca. How could that possibly happen? We didn't get the bundling law passed. Remember when Elliot Spitzer was here? He said, I'm going to accept only a certain amount of donation. I'm going to lower the level. Then he had a guy go out for one of his fundraisers. I think he was asking $5,000. This individual guy got 100, 150 of his friends to give him individual checks of $5,000 or something of that nature. I don't know if that's the exact scenario. That's called bundling. When that guy brings 150 individual checks from other people and says, I got these checks for you, he gets that undue influence. So you can't let that bundling type of thing happen. And we need total transparency. The speaker has shown we need total transparency. And anybody who is involved with selling their office with these non-for-profits and getting kickbacks knows we need total transparency. We've got people who are doing outside employment. And I'm not sure we need full-time elected officials right now, because this illustrates this issue. We went 6 months, and in a week, we got all the important things done. I think we put it back to 3 months and reduced the salary to $35,000, cut it in half, and let farmers say, hey, I got a nice farm here, family farm, but I'd like to put in 3 months in the New York State legislature. A small business person, I can go in there and show them how I can help with regulations and mandates and help small businesses create jobs for these people who are looking for employment and leaving the state because they can't find employment here. So I actually think it'll bring more good people if you shorten the term instead of rewarding people who are breaking the law. What you're basically saying, we've got to stop corruption by giving them a full-time job. Well, that's not going to stop corruption. If they're corrupt with 6 months, they'll be just as corrupt with 12 months.
And by the way, with 3 months too. I couldn't agree with you more. I could not agree with you more.
Wow.
And you are...
Well, let's write down this date and the time of this and get that in place.
You are exactly right. But here's one where you'll disagree with me. You know, because things have gotten so bad, I had to argue as part of my academic responsibility. I argued with Stanley Steingott, of all people, that we should televise the legislature. He said the people will resent it. So we put the legislature on television. Nobody watched.
15 people are watching us on there.
But now I'm thinking about the conferences, because all of the major decisions are made behind closed doors in the Democratic and Republican conferences. What do you think about putting democracy's from the people, representative government?
You know, mark this down. There's two things I agree with you on. I have no problem whatsoever in opening up our conferences. You know, I would think the majorities have a problem with opening up the conferences. Because they're the ones who, I hate to say this, play the most games on both sides of the aisle. Like you said, and you've told it right, I write a nice piece of legislation, okay? It's ridiculous to take my name off it, change a few sentences, and put a majority member's name on it. Why would you want to do that? Why would you not want to let every elected official sponsor your bill, Democrat or Republican, if it's a good bill. We know what the answer is. It's politics. And at election time, they want to say, you didn't support this bill. Well, I didn't support it because you wouldn't let me put my name on your bill. And I'd be happy to support it. Some bills, I wouldn't be happy to support it. When I put a bill forward, I circulate to all the Democrats and all the Republicans. I go over to the Senate and try to get Senate Republicans and Democrats to support my bill. And if a senator who's a Republican won't sponsor it, I try just as hard to get a Democrat senator to sponsor the bill. And I've been fairly effective. On that Common Core Parental Refusal Act, which we've had a discussion about, I've got some Republican sponsors, some Democratic sponsors in the Senate, and both the same in the Assembly. And by the way, after our discussion, you know the adjustments that the Regents and the SED have decided to make on that particular discussion, Common Core. They are going to reevaluate all the questions. They're going to make them developmentally appropriate because they feel as though they're not necessarily developmentally appropriate. They're going to release the questions quicker to parents and to teachers so they can use it as a diagnostic tool. And I don't know if you saw what happened in Congress, in the federal government. They've said we're not going to mandate from our side the level of testing. We're going to leave it up to the state. That's a totally different direction because they said we were going to withhold funding if you didn't do what we said in the number of hours. So they are looking realistically at the fact that testing is not the be-all and end-all in terms of evaluating kids and teachers.
Now that you mentioned teachers, you're a Republican. You're from the Schenectady area. I wanted to ask you something, Jim. I've asked you this many times. Hugh Farley isn't getting any younger. He's a senator. If he leaves, do you think you'll run for that Senate seat?
I don't know. He may be a Brad Pitt, too. He's like the ever-ready bunny. He just keeps moving and moving. You know, it kind of disturbs me just a little bit. And yes, I want to be honest. I am interested in that seat if Senator Farley leaves. But I would never say to Senator Farley, unless I thought he was not doing the job, working hard at his job, making the events. My assembly district is totally just about encompassed in his senatorial district. And we've been working together for many years. What disturbs me is when people come out in an election and the one attack they have against those who have been there for a while, well, he's a career politician. Well, you know what? If I'm going to go get a heart transplant and a kid walks in the morning and it looks like he just shaved for the first time and he says, I'm a doctor. I just graduated a month ago and I'm going to be doing your heart transplant and it'll be my first heart transplant. What are you going to say to him? Get out of here and bring me back a guy who's done 300 heart transplants and every one of them is still living. In other words, experience counts. And you should be judged on the character, content, and quality of the work you're doing. I call that ageism. When somebody comes out and says, well, a guy is 82, and he's 82. So what? He's 82. He just did a bike ride in the Netherlands around the entire community out there, traveled out there. So I think when Senator Farley's ready to leave, he'll get up one morning. This is what I always say about my sense. Or he'll wake up in bed and he'll say, I don't really want to get out of bed this morning. He'll know it's time to leave and retire. When I do
so
that,
you're not for term limits?
I'm a sponsor of a term limit bill. But if you're ready to put in term limits, put them in right now and I'll live up to them, okay? But I don't think somebody should leave because they've been there a long time right now.
No, I hear you.
Yeah. But I'm not in agreement with term limits because people can't be capable of doing a good job. In New York State, we have too many people who are not capable of doing a good job. So you've got to have some movement here. I think 12 years is probably enough, maybe six terms in New York State.
How about pot? I know that you've
never
thought
had,
of it.
Never inhaled.
Not at all. I know that.
No.
But you've been thinking about this question. What do you want to do with it in New York?
Well, I think what we've done is the right thing to do. I mean, we have some kids who are suffering some very dreadful diseases, cancer, leukemia. It helps with seizures. For those kids who get seizures, it's in pill form, it's in liquid form. You can't get high from it, so it's not like it's going to be a bridge thing. If your doctor says you can get some of these pills or you can get some.
Okay, but why not legalize it altogether?
Well, you know, I've talked to some people about that, and they say without question it is a bridge drug,
a gateway drug. Yeah,
gateway drug. That's what I meant, gateway drug. And you know, we have a real problem with crack, but a serious problem with heroin. And a lot of those people who are addicted to heroin will tell you, yeah, I started out with lower-level marijuana, moved to pills, subscription pills that I got out of the cabinets, and then wanted to do something more, and then got into crack, and now I'm on heroin. And heroin is so cheap right now, and there's so many different forms of it. It is extremely dangerous. And when you know you got to give law enforcement officials medication to reverse overdoses, you know there's a serious problem. So now, I'm not ready to go there yet to legalize it fully.
Now, I know we're sort of running out of time here, but we do have time because I know that you and I share one great passion, and that is our animals and dogs and
without
cats.
Without question.
Yeah. So my question to you is, what is this legislation that you're sponsoring, the Registry for Animal Abusers?
Yeah, we've got a problem where we have a tendency to allow counties to do things, good things, individually. And when they do that, it waters down the effectiveness of it. Albany's one of the counties who has a statewide animal registry. I think Nassau, I think there's a couple other counties, but we have 62 counties.
And what does it do when you've committed a crime against an animal, you're in the registry, like a
committed,
sex registry?
Convicted a crime, you've paid your penalty, but you should always be on a register because it's not a right. It's a privilege to own a pet. And one of the things when you abuse an animal to that level, which is a felony level, you should never be able to own a pet again unless you can prove to the court that psychologically and emotionally and in your own place, you've got a different mindset. And that's a part of the bill also, provide for mandated psychological evaluation and treatment. Because a part of animal abuse is also this hoarding thing. We've had cases where there's been 140 cats, 30 of them in a freezer in a house, and the rest of them just destroying a house in a neighborhood. There's a disease factor. That's a severe form of animal cruelty. But the people doing it think they're helping the animals. They have psychological problems. You've seen that hoarding thing on TV. What our bill would do is uniform it across the state. You'd be on that statewide registry until you can convince a judge. You'd get psychological treatment. If you haven't convinced the judge, no pet shop, no family who has a litter of eight cats would give you one because they could take your name and you'd have to give your ID. They call the number with the corrections people, statewide registry. If your name's on that registry, you would not be able to own a pet. We think that's the least we can do if you've had that form of damage and cruelty to an animal.
Yeah, so does the bill have a shot?
Oh, yeah. It's got great sponsors in the Senate, great sponsors in the Assembly. Ever since we did the sexual abuse registry, my colleagues in the majority, kind of liberal, kind of moderate, kind of progressive, don't like registries that much, okay? They want rehabilitation. And believe me, I got this three strikes bill for individuals where they lose their driver's privileges. Well, once again, driving is not a right, it's a privilege. We had a case with a wonderful woman who was a volunteer in Schenectady at Proctor's who was walking across the street. Someone blew down the street and ran her over. You know how many violations that person had for driving? 19 driving violations and still had his license. And we say at some point, and I'm proud to say I asked the governor to do this administratively with my bill, and he has done it administratively with the bill. The only problem is he did it retroactively, which I don't think is fair. I think once you pass a bill, maybe you got to go forward.
From that moment
it.
Forward, yeah.
Yeah. But this would say on the fourth strike, with a combination of DWI and dangerous driving. See, a lot of people don't know, a lot of these violations are just cowboys, dangerous drivers who are driving wild on the street. Take away your privilege. And if you're caught driving, see, this is the good thing. That doesn't mean you have to break the law. If we stop you at some stop and you don't have a driving privilege, this bill says you're going to go to jail for 4 years because I'm sensitive to addiction. We have to try rehabilitation, but when it fails over and over, we've got to err on the side of protecting innocent, honest, law-abiding citizens and keep these people off the roads because they're chronic. And once they're chronic to that extent, where they're, look at these kids at Shenandoah who lost their lives. Again, kid had a history of drinking and drugs and was still out there with a driver's license.
Jim Todisco, great having you here. It is so refreshing to have a guy who speaks his mind. I don't know where you get that from.
Well, we're two guys who speak our mind.
Well, I am, and I always say I like getting into trouble. I just don't like it when I'm there. And so it's great for you to give us all this time. We appreciate it very much, and you're always welcome back.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. And keep getting younger. Maybe it's my glasses. I don't know, my prescription, but you do look good. You're in great shape, my friend.
You too.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.